themselves into.
Now, perhaps I should explain before we go on to the next part of this ceremony. Jean wrote a letter to various members of the committee in which he referred to us as the next best thing to island pirates. Well, we're about to prove just how right he is. Volunteers to be stewards, gophers, runabouts, general sorters out of trouble. If you do get yourself into a bit of muddle, or if you can't find what you need, or if you've got any problems, they are the first line of defence that you go and talk to. There are others of us with blue badges who are special helpers who will also be pleased to help out. And finally, if there really is no other recourse, there are several very, very harassed-looking people wearing yellow badges, see along here. But really, they will be diving about very busy. So if you can find myself or one of the people with red badges on first, rather than driving the committee already at a breaking point beyond things. Now, I should mention at this point, there is somebody I haven't introduced in the committee. because before they have been doing press today, now you can imagine Jean and Major being here. The press have been like ravening wolves at the door. And having been in conventions for 8 years, and most of us having been around certainly for 4 or 5 years, we forget what the pressure is like on a newcomer in trying to cope with being on a convention committee. And I'd like a round of applause for a lady I have not introduced by the name of Wendy, who is suffering at the moment from exhaustion with coping with these press people. So Wendy, hope you're feeling a bit better soon, and a round of applause for Wendy, please. A purse has been handed to you. If you've lost a purse with keys in it and a picture of Africa on the radio, fine. Would you like to come and sort of put in a bid or a claim or whatever afterwards? I think the only other thing I need to say to you right now is that if you are a NEO, that is a new fan at their first convention, would you mind desperately creeping up a shy hand so we can perhaps see? Oh, we do have one of you. Excellent. Now, this is where I warn you.
Ladies.
Be very careful that gentleman down there on the sound desk. The sheep in wolf's clothing. Gentlemen. I don't know where to start. Beware of me and definitely half the committee and possibly one or two others. We would like to say welcome to you, and if you have any questions whatsoever about the convention or about anything you want to know to do this weekend, I'm going to be up in room 221, which is the steward's room, for the next quarter of an hour or so to answer any questions that you've got. So if there's anything you need to know, reasonably relevant. I'll do my level best to answer. I hope you all have a good convention. We'll certainly do our best to see what you do, and I think you agree we've got a good start, haven't we? Yeah. Enjoy yourselves, and we'll see you at some stage tomorrow when we've recovered from tonight. Thank you.
Sure, and to me, I haven't done anything.
I agree with him 100%. It's just a pleasure, to be over here, to be asked over here, and having letters from you for so long, and be able to meet you face to face is really something else. Now, are you sure we're not still a colony?
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Tries to open this door, there's nothing but the balloon in there. He can't get in until they figure out how to break the darn thing so he can get back into his office. And a terrible thing, poor Bob Justman at one point, Gina's mentioned too about nervous breakdowns. Well, he was having one. So they decided to send him off to Hawaii for a vacation. And as he gets into the plane and starts to sit down, he sees Baylock sitting there next to him. He was invited on first being a celeb and so on, and there he was stuck with Baylock. So he went along with it. He figured this is just, you know, part of the joke. And needless to say, the other people that got on the airplane almost changed planes, but they didn't know if this thing was going to fly with them or not. But he managed to get over there, and I don't know whether he was having a good time or not, but they did pull another one on him while he was there. There had been a great deal of stress around the set at that time, and that was one of the reasons he was shipped off. But they sent him a telegram. All right, they sent him a telegram to the effect that said, please disregard previous telegram. The crisis is almost removed. We may begin shooting again in a week or so. Well, all of a sudden, that was very funny until about, you know, 2 or 3 hours later, they were saying, supposing he takes this seriously. You know, they called and he has packed his bags. He was on his way out of the hotel. I mean, just little things like that. Oh, and Gene did something terrible to me. We had taken up lapidary work in gem cutting and things like that, you know. And, you know, I always kid that other women got cars and Cadillacs and I got a motorcycle. And other women got furs and so on and gave me a dog. And instead of the diamonds, I got a do-it-yourself kit, which is a lapidary set. But one day when there were a lot of people sitting around the office, he gave me a present. Now that's suspicious in the first place. You just don't do that to a person in front of other people sitting around there. So I opened it very, very suspiciously. And in this box, you know, that's about so big, I opened it and there's a crystal. There's a crystal form. I thought, oh God, isn't this pretty? And so when I reach it and I pull it out, it's the most phallic looking thing you have ever seen in your entire life. That set me back quite a bit, but I thought, I'll get you. And the next day I'd gone out and I had got into one of the animal training places and had them send me, which I brought into the back, into the lot, in the back seat of my car with a thing thrown over. If they'd seen this lamb coming in, they would have been hysterical. Put it in through the back window before Gene got there, and tied to its neck was a little book that said, Sex Without Guilt. So I figured, let him explain that. All day long, that thing was running off, dropping little turds all over his office. They had this mannequin in Bob Justman's office. Poor guy. Anyway, they put it in a shower. This used to be a bunch of dressing rooms. And they put this mannequin in the shower in between these two offices. And Bob was, what they'd done, she was naked, of course, she didn't have much up there. Anyway, and they put a little apron across her waist and so it would cover whatever, you know, wasn't there. And he had brought some friends, or it may have been a relative, or anyway, somebody that should not have happened to. And he walked through and had a habit of going bloop, like this, you know, underneath the skirt, just to people going through. Well, I forget what his name was, but our our makeup man had gotten to this mannequin before. And he takes him through and goes bloop, like this. Well, underneath what he had done is he had put some very strategically placed hairs. And these people walking through take one look at this, and I thought Bob was going to go out the next window, and he hardly knew what to do. Oh, well, hold on. This is one. Well, as Jesus, we were in such states of terror most of the time, and we had new people coming in, and we had a new story editor coming in one day, and of course he had to go through the old ritual of us having a joke played on him. So he got me to do this one. I put on this white bikini bathing suit that I had, and I walk into this guy, and he's got an office on the second floor, and walk into his office, and that being announced, because Gina's told me, he says, see this, I've been putting her off for ages, you gotta see this actress for me. So I go in, and I say, Mr. Jones, baby, I tell you, I've just been waiting for ages. I understand you've got a picture that you're going to be shooting now. And I kept, as I was doing all this whole routine, you know, which I put off come my clothes. And he is looking, he's standing there, sitting there behind his desk, and he's going back further and further and further. And I said, I'd just do anything in the world I possibly could for you. And he's getting further and back. Now he's next to a window, and that's on the second floor. And this guy's pulling back and says, no, I don't want to start this way. That's all I could remember. He says, I do not want to start this way. Well, at this point, I'm praying to God what is planned, you know, is going to happen, because I'm down to nothing now, almost. Finally, into the room storms Gene and Bob and about four others, and they take a look. Oh, John, what are you doing? I didn't. And he goes, his voice had gone up about three octaves. Now, they're standing there. I'm on the sofa like this with practically no clothes on. He is hysterical, like, and his phone rings. His wife is calling. He says, hello, honey. She was called to find out how his day was going. That's sad. Oh, all right, I've got another one. Leonard, at one point, bought a new bicycle. He was very proud of this bicycle. And he had, you know, it was his own thing, and he was riding it around a lot. And he parked it in the rack, and they took it, and they hid it, I think it was in the makeup room. Well, nobody would tell him. Finally, he goes into the makeup room, he finds it, he takes it back out in the rack, and he says, oh, I'm not going to trust him with this, I'm going to lock it to the rack. They pick the rack up, take the rack inside the stage, heist it up on top of this huge stage onto the catwalk up there, and say, okay, Leonard, go find it. Well, I mean, you know, he knows it's gone. Eventually, somebody must have told him. He looks up. Now, he's got to go up there and lower the whole thing back down. So, okay, he's going to fool everybody. He takes it into his dressing room, which is a portable dressing room outside, you know, locks it in his dressing room. They heist up the dressing room, take it around. Take it around to the back of the building. I think at this point he thought he was going to have to give up, so he puts it in the back of his car in the very back seat, and they take his car out and put it in the other lot. Well, when he finally found that one, he said, I give up. He brings it back, he puts it in the thing again, not being locked, and of course everybody accepts it and it's all right, and nobody bothers him with his poor bicycle again. But, oh, where am I now? The story editor stopping. Gee whiz. Somebody, if you can think of a question, start. Oh, all right, but there were some, you know, gee, those were nice things, but when we got on into, through the series, and now it's been off for a while, now they start to say, okay, let's make a motion picture. What had really happened was they had started to say, make a motion picture. And Gina started to work on scripts and ideas and everything, and we get to a certain point, and they're going to go ahead and make a Star Trek picture. The script goes in to a guy who's head of the studio by the name of Barry Diller. He's an ad agency executive who's failed downward. He now runs the studio. That's the case in most American companies, you'll find. And he gets the script, and it's gone to music. Everybody is all ready to shoot the thing, and he says, no, we're not going to do it. So Gene thinks, all right, we'll put up with this. I said, we'll give him a call, find out, we'll have a meeting, so what's wrong with it? And the word comes back down from Barry Diller. It says, I don't talk to talent. I hire underlings for that. Now, when the series finally started to get onto the air, not onto the air, but I mean, when it was going to be made into a movie the next time, and orders from Blue Dorn, who owns Gulf and Western, came down and said, here, what is this Star Wars that's going out and making fortunes? Don't we have something called Star Trek? And said, well, let's get it to work. He finally relents and says, okay, we're going to make the picture. He says, now, would you do me a favor? Would you send me up 3 episodes that are representative of Star Trek? He's never seen it. Never, ever seen it. And he turned down Gene's script. I mean, it was a good script, too. It still should be made. But those are, you know, some of the sad things that happened, like the last year of Star Trek. Well, you know, the first year was tough enough, and we didn't have much of an audience. The second year got better because the fans wrote in. They kept us on the air the second year is what happened. We were at a halfway decent arc. We were going to get a reprieve, we thought, for the third year. And they had us penciled in for, I guess it was Monday evening at 8 o'clock, which was a beautiful, beautiful time. Now, Gene had gone down to Palm Springs and was writing stories. I think he had about 8 or 10 stories all ready to go. And it was a very up time, and it was grand. And one night, I got a telephone call from one of the executives at NBC who says, Gene, baby. Well, now that's the kiss of death. Right away, you know something is wrong. He said, have we got a break for you? He said, we have a spot. He says, we're going to put a schlock show into that 8 o'clock spot, which was, and I'll think of it. I can't think of it right now. But it turned out to be a great hit, which is true. He says, we've got a marvelous time. It's going to be Friday night at 10 o'clock. You know, Friday night at 10 o'clock for us, as I think I explained before, slightly better than 2 a.m. Sunday morning. I mean, we have a group of people who are alive and alert and young, and they're doing things, and they want to do things and go places and go. I mean, Friday night's the night to do it. They're not working. They don't have to go to school the next day. Friday and Saturday, that's just death for us. So there went that one right down the drain, too. There are a lot of heartaches that go on with this, and you can't convince these television networks and the people who run them, unfortunately, that they're wrong, and you can't, because they say, well, I've got figures and I've got numbers of people who are watching. Unfortunately, at that time, what they didn't have was demographics, which proved that we were the best show on television at that time, and probably really should be on and could still be on today if they had paid any attention to that. Yeah. Well, what else do we have here? Going back to networks again, so many people have said, no, I like you better with dark hair. I have dark hair, as you saw on the cage. But what had happened was they turned me down for the cage. They said a woman cannot be second in command to a spaceship. They said nobody would ever believe that type of thing. Yeah, I feel the same way. So Gene had to recast the thing, and what they really said was that we don't like the broad, we don't like the guy with the ears, you'll have to get rid of both of them. Well, the way he explains it, he said he thought it over, and he said he really liked the guy with the ears an awful lot, and so he gave the guy with the ears the character of the broad and shoved her out, married her, because he didn't think Leonard would have it the other way. So that's how I ended up, you know, with a dark hair, which was a wig too at that time, but it was a black hair. And I really wanted to be, and I was heartbroken, and I wanted to be in Star Trek so badly. So one day I sat outside of Gene's office, and I'd read the scripts that were coming up. And I just bleached my hair blonde and sat there. He walked right by me, didn't even know me. I figured it works for him, it's got to work for everybody else. So, it said, gee, how about putting me in, you know, into something else, in this other part that's coming up, is what little girls were made of. And so he rewrote that around me and introduced the character, and then we managed to make it stay. But the way a network feels, and the network to this, I mean, not to this day, now we've been bragging about it a little, I've been bragging about it a little, I'm sure they're mad, but they blame it on somebody else. They didn't know for those whole 3 years that the same person played both parts, because once they say no to somebody, they don't want to see him again. It's just one of those horrible things that exist. I mean, if they had, under what name I had used, if I'd been up for a guest role, they would not have accepted me. I don't know how it works over here, but that's the way it is over there. Yeah. What else can I tell you about all these things that are going on here? Oh, again, I know another question is going to be, yeah, I would have loved to have been in Star Trek 2 and 3, but frankly, I was not asked. Now, then, there are a lot of different theories. It really kind of boils down to when Gene turned over the producership to somebody else. You kind of have to go along with that person. Well, that person and every other person who's come across Star Trek really kind of want to make Star Trek theirs. They want to leave their mark on it. It will never be anyone's but Gene Roddenberry's. And it's Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek, but they don't... they quite understand that even now, and to have, if he is not calling the shots, shot by shot, I don't think they want his wife running around the set telling him what's happening. That's been unfortunate for me, and I wish it would change. And I'll tell you what, if you guys would get busy and get out there and write them letters, they might actually, you know, that's kind of powerful. It's the same thing as I'd like to ask it too, in speaking about putting marks on shows, when somebody decides to blow up the Enterprise, which is home to the Star Trek people, which the President of the United States felt was important enough that he changed the shuttle name to it, which is, these are the voyages of the Star Trek Enterprise, not the Star Trek Excelsior. I think it's important that we save the Enterprise. I mean, save Chapel, save the Enterprise, but right. You've got to promise me you'll do that. I'm not hearing anything.
Yes.
Right. Wow. This is help. What else did
I
tell you about?
Let's blow up Excelsior.
Huh?
I said, let's blow up Excelsior.
Here you go.
Yeah.
As Jimmy Doohan likes to put it, the pregnant guppy.
I love it.
This is kind of fun for me. I'm not allowed to talk about Star Trek at home. No, we don't do it because then when we come to a place like this, it makes it a little fresher, it makes it a little newer. Although I still sometimes think that I would like to know a little more about it than I do. But then at least I can talk to you about things that I feel that perhaps you haven't heard before, if I'm making any sense. Hold on. I got to see this a minute. I wish I could rehearse this stuff. All right, I'll tell you what, if you want any background, I started out doing stock and lots of other things too, but I was on Broadway. I had two shows, one of them which opened and closed in a very fast week, called Bottles by Season. The other one was a hit, and it was a solid gold Cadillac, in which I toured for 9 months. Now, if you think that one of the reasons I don't go to many conventions is I've had my time of traveling. We hit 27 cities, I think, in 45 weeks, and at that point, all you're doing is changing hotel rooms. And I figured in a 9 month period of time, I could have done something constructive, like had a baby. But that was, it just got to be god-awful. That's not too much fun. And then going on, being like resident leading lady of a couple of summer stock shows or winter stock companies, which makes it even worse. I did 10 weeks of stock in Bermuda where the director had the mistaken idea that the resident leading lady should have the largest part no matter what it was. So, I mean, your eyes get blurry. At night you go home after the show and start memorizing the lines for the week after that. In the morning you read the week after that's show so you can get familiar with it. Then rehearse the next week's show and play the third one at night. That's not that much fun, really. I honestly found, people say, oh, stock, and isn't this great, and aren't you having a ball, and so on. No, it's a lot of work, and it's not terribly creative either. I think your biggest job in that is learning lines and where you're supposed to be on stage at the right time. I've seen people just turn around, turn blank like this, walk off stage, get their line, walk back on, and you know, unfortunately, the audience seldom picks it up. We think we're doing all this work for timing and so on, it's lost. But no, I enjoyed it. I don't regret any of it. And then coming out here, I came out here, I think I'm in California. I came out, went out to Hollywood to play opposite Eddie Horton, Everett Horton, in All for Mary. I remember at the Pasadena Playhouse, and that's how I ended up in Hollywood. And then under contract to Paramount. It seems to be my home somehow or other. And from there, I was working in groups an awful lot, and I worked with Tony Quinn and Jeff Hayden. We worked in Method, and the Neighborhood Playhouse and Sandy Meisner. I worked with a lot of great, marvelous people and, you know, a lot of dedicated people, marvelous people. That's where I got to know Leonard Nimoy the first time, too. He was in a little hovel, a dark room, with the whole thing would cover this little area right up here. And they were doing a play called Death Watch. I think it was a play about three men who were deserted in a prison, and it looked like a prison too. And I was so impressed with what his work was and how he, and you know, his raw talent, his raw ability. So that's how we kind of got together. It was strange then because the first show that introduced Leonard to Gene was the one that we did of The Lieutenant. And Leonard Nimoy and I were both in it together at the same time. And then to end up later in The Cage. Well, forget about some things sometimes. go ahead, as I'm reminiscing here. The ones that happened on set, I'm giving them to you as well as I can. Is it like, you know, did anything happen? It looks like Bill Shatner was the one who was at the butt of them from the bloopers. What you have to remember about the bloopers is they have been edited also, or they were just what was left in. The way the bloopers got made was every year, at the end of the year, we had a Christmas party. And it was we never knew these things existed. We never knew that they'd kept them at all, but it was the crew. And they all got together, and the guys who printed up this stuff and the editors, and they showed us these funny things that we had done all year long. So it didn't have anything to do with anybody really trying to make a blooper or anybody trying to make a mistake. I mean, these were mostly honest-to-God mistakes. Or just if you really got tired one night, you just kind of like kid your way through something or you stage a joke, knowing that sometimes not even knowing it would get on camera. And figuring like, well, it would be shown in the dailies the next day, and the producer would laugh, or somebody would laugh, and the thing always gets thrown away. But that's how that happened. There wasn't, it wasn't that Dee was any funnier than the rest, or pulled any more jokes, or Leonard, or it's just the way it happened. Moving west. What can I say? How about somebody else now? If you sort of lead me on, I can probably keep going for a long time. Where are my glasses? This is something I can't get by without these days. Oh, let me see if there's anything really that I want to tell you about that I haven't yet over here. Rod? Oh, well, Rod. I have a 10-year-old son. I have to talk about Rod. But a super little kid. He's not so little anymore. He grew up just all of a sudden overnight one night. And we've tried... We tried desperately to keep Star Trek away from her or what it is, because he's going to grow up with this stigma no matter what you do, and on top of it, we named him Gene Roddenberry Jr. So it's even worse. We call him Rod, but he's never really pushed this on anybody. We've tried to keep him away from it, and we've taken him on to sets and everything. He just found out who he was. He ended up, when the last picture was made, of inviting not one but two girlfriends. Took them over onto the set, wined them, dined them all day long, with his father's permission, too, and going along with them. And the kid made out like a bandit. I mean, the kid is going to be fearsome if he keeps this up much longer. But he's a great, terrific kid. He's not really at all affected. And so far, I don't think they have gotten to him too badly. Because he's really in an atmosphere where a lot of other parents have probably almost, they're not, their parents aren't legends, unfortunately, or fortunately. But he's handling it quite well. He seems to be a pretty level kid. That's terrible me telling you about this, I can't show him to you. But I had to tell you about him anyway because he's adorable. I've got to go back too early and put him into school too. We have a school that starts around September. When does your school here start? After
it does. Scotland started a fortnight ago.
Oh yeah? That's too bad. Nice for us. Oh, what else? Well, where did I go? Oh, well, I would, let me go back through my history then. I was under a contract to Lucille Ball. That was kind of interesting, too, for a while. That went on for a year, and she had a group of, I think there were almost 18 or 20 of us that she had put under contract, not hoping to revive the old system, where the school system, but at least to try to give exposure. And it worked so much in the office that everybody figured that we were her kids. Well, at that time, you know, I was a 28-year-old kid, and I really didn't need to go back to where I was thought of as a 15, 16-year-old who was just learning about the industry. But we all got, hooked up in that stigma. I'm not sure there were any real stars that came out of it, but some of the kids managed to work. So it's not a whole bad system. It's just sort of, I'm afraid, outdated. But that doesn't leave too much of a learning ground for anyone here, well, not here, but anywhere, who is interested in getting into art industry. And anybody who ever asks me about it, I always say stay away, or at least get a job and be prepared to feed yourself some other way. It's tough. It's tough. But it's fun. All right. Another thing on Star Trek. Gene reminded me of this, too. It's so nice to know that Star Trek, over the years, over 20 years, has gotten to mean something to people, about even as a change of the way of life. He was telling me that someone came up to him and said that watching Star Trek had somehow or other gotten him off of heroin. That he just saw a better world and a better place and how what you could do if you were clear-headed. And I have gotten so many inquiries, too, from through LinkedIn and the fan mail and the service and everything, of people who, like groups of learning disabilities, for example, they called and they asked, could we have some of your scripts? We feel that perhaps this might be a way to teach some of these children. Well, some of these children who've never been able to read, never been able to comprehend, their grades have gone considerably higher, and it has helped. It has helped so tremendously. And that makes us feel good inside when something like that can happen and when we have a lasting effect on someone. Somebody else had said that they had decided to continue their education. If we can just reach one person that way, my God, the whole thing is worthwhile. It's given people a feeling of today, when we don't know if the bomb is going to destroy us all tomorrow or not. What Star Trek says is, it's not how good or how bad is tomorrow going to be, or is there, it says there is one, and this is what we're going to do. And I think that's probably the appeal, and that's what makes it so universal. It isn't nationalistic or anything, it's just worldwide, and that's where we're going. That is the final frontier, we haven't got anywhere else. Sure. I don't know if you all heard that, but she said, I'm playing the part of somebody who's gone into space. Would I do it for real? I got to tell you about getting onto an airplane for me. It's traumatic. I'm onto a 747. Before it's off, I've got both hands like here, and I'm saying, please, please get up, up. As Gene says, I keep on lifting, saying, up, up. It's not easy for me. I can't sit next to a window. I can't look down. I can't do it. It's awful. And I know that it doesn't make a darn bit of difference. Once I'm up there, if it decides to go down, it's forget it anyway. But I just say, I mean, why? I'm the old one, you know, if God had meant for us to fly to give me wings. No, I wouldn't go up. No. I would have to be born into a force. I'd go screaming and kicking. That's about it. Okay, what else? Come on. You've got it. You've had a lot of time to think now. Yes. You mean movies, the three movies? Well, I think the last one was better because it was more Star Trek. It had more to say that was Star Trek. There was a feeling, there was a camaraderie between the people, there wasn't an emphasis on the hardware and all that stuff. I mean, that would be my favorite, yeah, without a doubt. And the Wrath of Khan I thought was fun and so forth. The first one, of course, got bogged down in all that technicality. And the mess that went on to try to make that was an impossible situation. We know we tried to make it for 5 years. They spent $20 million before the thing ever rolled. And it was just one fiasco after the other. So it's just unfortunate. Sad. Yes, back here. They did that. They heard some rumors that perhaps they went around the Enterprise a little too long. I mean, regardless of how pretty it is, they did it already, and it made it a little bit longer. But they put back some of the things that made it a little more personal, which was, you know, it was lovely. But there were still some almost insurmountable factors. And Gene was trying to recut it and wanted to recut it. He could have made it a whole lot better picture if he could have just started from scratch and recut it. But you still had to work within a framework where, there was so much technicality around that it became a steel type of look. But there was a lot more. I wish he would recut it. We'd see an entirely different picture. I think one you'd like a whole lot better too. Yes.
The motion picture, Star Trek: The Motion Picture, on ITV on the 3rd of September. As far as we know, it is the new extended version. Like 7:30, Monday, 7:30.
It sounds like our programmers. Yes. Please, hold on a minute. I got a question.
I have every intention of writing suitably to try and get you back in.
Good.
Do you know anything about the timing of this? I mean, how close are they to agreeing a script for the fourth movie? Because, I mean, if it's all written, can we get you back in? Do you see my problem?
No, there's no problem with that. It's not written, and contrary to what the people carry today in the newspaper, there is going to be a fourth motion picture. What Gene had said, you probably all heard it too, was that he would not be involved in another television series because of the demands on time and everything. It had nothing to do with whether there was going to be a Star Trek 4, because there is going to be a Star Trek 4. And the last I heard, and I don't think, I believe it's all right to say, I've heard it said, is that Leonard Nimoy is going to direct it. And they're working on a story, and at the moment, I believe Harve Bennett is going to produce it. Now, we were in St. Louis a couple of months ago, and Harve even almost admitted that, right there on the spot, that he was going to do it. And he also said, because we had the St. Louis fans going at him pretty strong at that time, and he said that he might bow to their demands and put the chapel back in it. Then, of course, when you get home, you can always change your mind. I'm hoping that won't happen, but if it takes a little prodding, you can still help, because I know the script is not written yet. I don't even know who's going to do it. I don't think Harve is going to do it. I think his contract stipulates, or he said he would not write it at any rate. And then I heard that Leonard had a story, and I heard that Bill had a story, and I guess, it belongs to somebody else. I don't know. Yes? As many as make money. Okay. Yes? That's interesting. I was going, because what we're going to do in over at Lincoln is have sort of spearhead a campaign and go through the Enquirer and have them all dumped on me, and then I will take them all over to the studio and dump them into probably Barry Diller's office or somebody just as frightening. To make it look like a huge, huge number. But I would say just starting off, especially from England, write to Barry Diller. But if you put Star Trek on the outside, it's going to end back up in the Star Trek office, so that isn't going to work. All your letters that you write to the studio. Do not put the name Star Trek on top. That means that they have to open it, because it might be a check or a bill. And they're not going to take a chance on which one and throw it away. But as soon as you put that name on the front, that's the office it goes to. And there it goes. It gets filed in that great big circular wastebasket and it's died. Yeah. Okay? You know, that's 5451 Marathon. I can tell you, it's 90028 California. Yes. It's Paramount Studios. You can just put Hollywood, California. You can put 5451. Marathon, MARATHON, Marathon Avenue. That's Hollywood, 90028. If you really just put Paramount there, it'll get me. It'll get there because you know somebody wrote to me, Majel Barrett, Hollywood, California, and they gave it to me. I was shocked. Somebody at the post office must have known. So. Where am I? Somebody. I was Barry Diller. That's as good as anybody. B-A-R-R-Y. Diller. D-I-L-L-E-R. Gene, who else is there? Really?
Very
good.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. It's 9-0-0-3-8. How about that? I didn't know that. I've been saying 2-8 for years. No wonder I'm all going astray. Anybody else over here somewhere? Yes.
Here, there's a newspaper article this morning in, I can't remember which newspaper, and I've got to turn it over if I got your attention, which says what you just already said about the Star Trek, the next movie as such. But it also says at the bottom of the article that, like Gene supposedly has said, that he's not going to give up his relationship with his 10-year-old son to carry on with the Star Treks. And then it says at the bottom that, in any case, the American TV networks can't afford any more Star Trek. So what does that mean?
All right, they can't. To do a weekly show is a huge expense. Now, we never went over. We had a budget, I think it was $100,000, which was unheard of in those days. We usually always came in under budget, but what a terrible fight. If you'll ever notice in the Star Trek series, only about half of those series were ever done on a planet. Most of them were done, as many, at least we saw that 50-50 were done on board ship because we had the existing sets. Money is a great, great problem. Now, when the networks get those things, and they're paying for it, they're paying for a certain amount, I don't know what the figures are, the studio has to pick up the rest of it. The way that the network then gets their money is they sell off time. Well, it depends on how much you can sell these minutes and quarter minutes and whatever you're selling for. By the time Star Trek would get produced today, it would probably be in the area of $1.25 million, perhaps, as compared to the $100,000. There's no way to get your money back in one run, probably in two. Now you're depending on third and fourth and fifth reruns. You're depending on merchandising. You're depending on everything else in the world. And a network just will not take on the responsibility. Only your super, super shows can ever make anything. If you're on 1, 2, 3 seasons, you can wipe it off. It's a write-off. I mean, it's a failure. And you can't do a half-hour Star Trek. It just, you know, it just wouldn't make sense. And there's no way to get the thing produced economically enough to have it put on TV on a weekly basis. The best they could hope to do, and this is what Gene was hoping to do many years ago, was to use it as a mini-series and do several 2-hour versions, which would have been fun. We went into that premise for a while, as a matter of fact, just prior to the first movie that was made. And that got dumped somehow. I don't know. There were a lot of good ideas that got dumped along the way for ones that didn't turn out as well. But that's hindsight. You can't do that. But as I said, there will always continue to be a Star Trek, as long as they're making money. But as soon as the possibility of that goes, you've seen your last one for until somebody decides to revive it 50 years from now. You know, in which case I don't think any of us will be able to play it. I mean, we're getting to that point now where we don't take coffee breaks, we take geritol breaks. they're going to have to make some changes. Okay, who's next? Here.
If Dr. Jekyll does make a reappearance, how would you like to see the character develop?
I'll tell you, if Dr. Chapel should come back, how would I like to see the character develop? I'd like to see it develop into a few substantial lines. wherever it does, it's still got to be a minor character, unfortunately. I wouldn't mind seeing it go in the same direction it was, as long as they didn't make such a wimp out of this poor broad. I mean, she's a loser to start from. I've always felt so sorry for her. You know, she gets onto a ship, in the first place to go find a lost love who turns out to be a robot. Big good, that's going to do her. Then she immediately signs on to a 5-year mission, takes a demotion in rank, bound down to nurse from doctor, falls in love with a guy who only comes in heat every 7 years. This woman is not bright. I'd just like to see her clarified. I would take her in any position they could ever put her. As long as she were there, and as long as there was something substantial, for heaven's sake, somebody have pity on the poor woman. but I'd take anything I could get. Who's next? Over here.
Which is your favorite of the episodes in which Nurse Chapel appears? After that, I'm not sure you have one.
Oh, well, no, if you were going to say of the episodes, period, it would have to be The Cage, of course. Gee, I don't even remember the ones that much. I didn't have much to do in any of them. I liked what I had to do better in What Little Girls Are Made Of, but I don't think it was as good a show as some of the others. I think I had something decent to do in Enterprise Incident, didn't I, or did I? I don't remember them by name. We got production numbers, some of them that weren't even named at that time. We were doing number 23 that week. So that's about the best I can answer you, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes? But I don't know what the reasons are for killing off, you know, raising all these people up and the young people whom I thought originally were being put in it to ease their way into these things, and then immediately off they go. There may have been, I'm not too sure about everything, but it just may have been, maybe David didn't come off that well. There could be personality problems on the set too, and as I understand, there was some of that going on with some of the newer characters. And you just don't walk into an old generation like that and say, I take over or become a pest. And if that's what happened, they're just not going to be around that long. I think that somehow or other they should cast some parts and create some parts and then create characters get the actors who can act the part. Rather than looking for somebody who might look like Bill or somebody who can wear ears this is my opinion that they're not going after the actor, they're just going after the type to try to fit in. And eventually somebody's going to have to change this whole thing or it's like the Starship, we're all going to blow up. That didn't answer you too well, I know it didn't. It did? All right. Without going into personalities, right? Who else? Come here, right here. Oh my lord, which should I prefer, number one or Chapel? Chapel would have been fun, as I said, if it could have been developed, but there was over an hour's period when you have two people who are in charge. You've got Spock and Kirk, then you've got McCoy, now you've got the other minor characters. If you just broke that up into an hour's period, do you know how much time I would get? About the time I got, probably, being like the bottom of the rung. So consequently, I mean, I'm not that fond of that particular character. It was just a means to an end, really. I just wanted to be part of it. Of course I preferred number one. My lord, she was written for me, number one, being created, the part for me. I could have ended up playing it, and it would have been just as important as any of the others. We would have had fun with it, and I would have had a good time. Because that's the type of thing, you know, that I love to do. It's like the one we did in Spectre. I played a witch, a modern witch, and I'd eat that kind of stuff up. You know, I said, look, a terrible scenery or do something upstairs. It was just the kind of thing that I would like to do. Number one, of course, would have to be, hands down, my favorite part. And I could see the emergence of that character again, used to great effect. I'm certainly not with this administration, but... Okay, next, please. Oh, yes. Hi.
Perhaps they could go back to Gene's original premise of the captain and the female first officer and Not the Excelsior. Number one, I think you've got someone in the driver's seat right now, like Leonard Nimoy, would never agree to this. Number two, obviously he's not going to go to a plastic surgeon because Gene offered that to get his ears rounded out for him. it's a lovely idea, but it's totally impractical, of course. Now, you missed one thing. They did not want to phase him out. He insisted on it. The only reason he did the part that time was so that they would kill Spock. See, that's one of the things where everybody thinks that the show is his or hers. Harv killed the Enterprise, and Leonard wanted to kill Spock, so they obliged him. Then Leonard got a change of heart, so he directed himself in his reemergence. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I have a horrible feeling that the next episode may be titled The Wrath of the Search for Spock and the Enterprise, at the rate we're going. I'd just like to see it go back to the Enterprise, the crew who's there, and to go ahead and have another adventure and do it the way it was done, only on the big screen. Where we are or how much time we have or what, but I mean, I'm here for questions. I haven't got much else to say. Yes. Oh, I would love that too. Of course I would, but I mean, I'm having enough trouble getting the Chapel character back in. They just, you know, in spite of the fact that I was in that many episodes, at this point they say, well, she wasn't there in every episode. That's the excuse they're getting. Can you imagine the trouble I'd have to get them back as number one, which was in something that was not even seen as part of the series? They wouldn't do it. I would love it. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Yes, back here. That may be. It almost screams for that, unless they just forget about what happened and go ahead and do the thing from scratch again. But what we're looking at now is a court-martial, which could be a dramatic thing. I don't know what would happen. I would sack the guys. I would put them in jail forever. You can't do that with Starfleet. To me, that left the realm of possibility and plausibility. They did a lot of things there that, in the first place, if you're going to buy Spock coming back, and you realize that our future is full of millions and trillions of Vulcans who cannot die throughout the universe. They can be brought back to life at any time. And how can you do the things they did? You don't just in a ship that takes 400, 300, somebody corrected me there, 430, whatever, however many it takes. How can four people get on it and take it into space? I don't buy that. I don't buy any of that stuff of somebody like Kirk, no matter how close his friendship was with Spock, stealing a spaceship or a starship and taking off into the wild blue and then going to a planet that is totally forbidden and all the things that happened. But this is, you're going to say again, it's dramatic license. I guess that's how they get through with it. What is actually going to happen again is going to be a lot of dramatic license, I think. And they'll have court-martial of some sort, and they will undoubtedly be exonerated, and hopefully that's not the end of the film. Hopefully then they go off and have another journey in the new starship called the Enterprise. Yes.
Yes. Sorry to have to point this out, but I have noticed that they have a precedent in that they write around the cage to make it an episode involved Spock stealing the Enterprise and going to Talos IV, which is an integrated planet, and therefore there has been a precedent.
But he was court-martialed for it.
But he was also exonerated.
Yes, well, that's what I said. You know, just based on that, it'll hold up. I was kind of thinking that if they were going to bring Spock back, the Talos IV would have been the place to do it originally. If you know, because there had to be some way to getting back. But that is, if they bought it once, they'll buy it again. And that was such a marvelous, ingenious way to use the cage in that double parter in the menagerie. It was a stroke of genius. There had been so many people working on that. I mean, big, important writers, too, you know. And Jean just sat down with it one day and took it and developed this, what we call the envelope, to go around with it. A stroke of genius. It was just beautiful. I'm a little bit prejudiced, but I know it was anyway. I've just been saying nice things about you.
I'll leave again.
Like you said. But talk about, why don't you say something about the enterprise, the how you got made the envelope, and the way this lady pointed out, if we're going to court-martial, or what they're going to do in Star Trek IV, it screams for a court-martial, and would the precedent be what happened on in the menagerie, as you so cleverly wrote in
well,
the
no,
envelope?
One of the things we will not do is a long court-martial story. We've done court-martials before,
yeah.
But whatever we do, we want to do something new and interesting. Of course, they will have to take care of that, but I've asked them to try to think of a way in which we take care of that very rapidly and get into a tale.
That's exactly what I just said, too. You know,
what they will do, and what we're looking for, is some happening so exciting and so necessary that they just waive the court-martial because of some special knowledge Kirk and others have to go out and meet this other problem.
Yeah, sounds good. Yes, don't go away. Yes.
This is yours. I was enjoying it.
Sure I am. I get this world. What? I mean, how often do you get 400 people sitting here staring at you, waiting for every word that you're stuttering out? Where am I back here? I was here. Somebody with an animal. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you at all. I agree with you 100%. I think he's gotten away with murder up till now. I don't know how they're going to reconcile it, but if you really want to follow it, I mean, the guy, he shouldn't be the head of a starship, that's for sure. But I mean, without it, we haven't got a Captain Kirk, we haven't got a Star Trek. So I think we'll have to find a way. Yeah. Take these people back with me, Jane. They have given us more ways and more things for number one, and they all make great sense.
Number one for CNC.
What?
Number one for the commander in chief.
I agree. That's good.
If she wasn't killed, she must have been promoted off the Enterprise and upwards.
I'm with you 100%. I just. You know, I wish I could put you at the head of the studio, and I wish you could be the producer and the director too, and the writer. Yes.
If you never knew the number one name, if for any reason hasn't ever occurred to anybody, that number one is probably Admiral Nakora.
Oh, all right, I'd like that one too. Oh my. But write all this down and send it on in. Oh, yes. Sarek hasn't got that much to do with anything. I mean, he's an ambassador, the same as there are millions of ambassadors throughout the Federation. He's not that important. I mean, he can't make any decisions like, I mean, should we okay somebody who goes out and steals our starship, takes it out, and then blows it up? I mean, should I don't know. Yes. Good idea. I like that. And we send the whole group back to Talos to gain their youth back again. I got it. All right, yes.
Presumably, Vulcan has her own fleet outside the Federation, so it would be possible for them to serve in the Vulcan fleet. But if
what? This would be kind of fun. I think this group is a little large for it, but I went to a convention up in Seattle, Washington once, and we had a group, you know, smaller. They said, why don't we sit down and why don't we write a story about for Star Trek? I said, now you would be so-and-so and you want to be this, or I mean, what would you like to be? And pretty soon these stories started coming out, you know, and we wrote a pretty darn good script. As a matter of fact, Vonda McIntyre, who was there, is a writer. She is going, and I've received several communiques from her, and she is going ahead and trying to develop this story. And this kind of group, I can tell from the stories I've heard right here, can probably write a whole series. Yes. I mean, what for the? I don't think I understood.
Well, don't know about Robbie and Kirk's favor, and Star Trek George should be in Fort Mark. He has actually managed to bring back a scout ship from Federation.
Oh, the fact that Kirk has managed to bring back a scout cruiser, Klingon scout cruiser. I just have a feeling that with all the reconnaissance that's going on at that time and in as far in the future as we are, that they can see every single thing that we do, that they would do, and into their banks and memory banks. And I don't think they need to see it. I don't. I mean, I personally don't. I don't think there are any secrets aboard that everybody else doesn't know. You know, no surprises. I may be wrong. Yes. Yes. That's interesting. You know, something funny about the Klingons, they were Gene's least favorite character. He liked the Romulans better because at least they were a little bit, there was a little bit of variation in those. The Klingons were painted as too black, just all one side. There wasn't a good thing about a Klingon, and that's just not humanly possible.
The beauty of evil.
But they only have one way to go. You can't find a Klingon that has a nice thought or a nice idea or anything. The one loved that ugly-looking little lizard dog. I guess maybe, or not loved it, but at least he kept it. I guess that's the nicest thing you can say about him so far. Pardon me?
Valkyrie's loved him. He said, farewell, my lord, and love. That's the honor business of love.
Oh, that's true. I never thought of that. Yes, my lord and love. Yeah, but you see what he did to her. Yes. Yeah, how do they pay? Where'd he go? I've always wondered how they paid this whole crew out there for a five-year mission. I suppose by keeping him alive and in the next segment. Okay. Yes, back here. No, but I won't tell you what age I was when one morning I woke up and I couldn't see in front of me anymore. And they're reading glasses, but now I find out that I can't read at all without them. I can't see there. I can see out here fine. I can read all this stuff. But, I mean, up close, I'm dead. I'm just getting old, I guess. But I thought sooner or later I will end up going into lenses of some sort. But at the moment, I wouldn't know what, you know, they would just be a discomfort to me. And unless I have to read something, I don't use them. So now they make nice decorations for my head. They keep my hair back a lot. That's right, restore my eyesight. If they could really do that, it would be all right. I'm afraid just doing it in the movie wouldn't help me a whole lot. But nice idea. Yes. No. I mean, nothing's changed. No. No, we haven't got any better series today than we had back then. We still have the same inane comedies. We have some good news reports. We have some good educational stuff. What we have got is we've got some pay TV type of channels. And we have public broadcasting channels now, which I find that I'm watching more and more of. Although I don't watch that as, you know, as vociferously as Gene does. He's into books or into that kind of thing. And I watch movies, But of course, I can watch them 24 hours a day on about six different channels, and there are most of them pretty recent hits. But as far as programming is concerned, no, the networks haven't done anything different. They keep putting them on, they keep taking them off. Well, now they're not leaving them on even for 13 or 26 weeks. They used to do that. Now they're only leaving them on. They say, well, we'll give you four shots. And they see how the ratings could go in four times around. You can't build anything with that anyway. I would hate to go on with Star Trek and only have four episodes to try to prove my point. But that's exactly what they're doing. We had one called Cagney and Lacey that was really quite good as a women cop type of thing. I liked that one too. It seemed fairly intelligently done. Well, they took it off. And again, the public got a little bit upset about this and said, hey, we'd like to see it back on again. They put it on, now they're number one. It's just weird. It's strange. Pardon me?
They did it with Fame as well.
Did they put that on, take it off?
Yeah, it's on one of the, not one of the major networks,
but the local ones. Paper Chase they did that with, and they put that back on public broadcasting system. They're paying. As a matter of fact, some of these other paid channels are beginning to produce their own movies, which means that they can get away and do anything they like. So we have something else that happens late at night. Have you ever seen an X-rated movie? Woo! It's strange to wake up in the night, turn on the TV set, and I can't tell you what's happening in front of you. And it's there. It's if you are a subscriber of the channel, that's what it is. Now, these aren't just X-rated. I'm talking about double X-rated. I'm talking about hardcore porn. That's kind of shocking. But it's there. Good old America. I knew we'd think of something before somebody else. Yes. Not too much. Number one is just when you go on, there's not too. I don't like it. I don't know. You have some informative things. I've watched some of that. Then I've watched Captain Kangaroo, and I've watched Big Bird, and the same stuff. I see that the children's programs, which are apparently not just aimed at children, but produced by children. There are some good things too. There are some tremendously good things, but I don't see. I don't see a direction of any sort. And then again, I've not watched it enough. It's a terrible thing to say and make a blanket statement out of it, but maybe I just haven't seen enough to really convince me. Do you get the same thing at the same time every week on the same day, or you just sort of have to wait and pick it out and then stay home and see it, huh? You're not going to build an audience like that. You've got to have some kind of uniformity, and maybe that's where we went wrong. Maybe you're going to head the right direction. But of course, we have so many more channels. My God, in heaven, every single one of them. We have 13, then we have another 100 behind that you can tune in a great deal of. And oh, that's 24 hours a day. You get an awful lot of junk, but if you keep on looking, something decent must be on it each hour. I'm not terribly impressed with what I've seen on British television. No. Yes. I think what kind of relationship would, if we had the opportunity, have been between McCoy and Chapel? And I just think one that would have come out of humor and warmth, because that was Dee, and that was me, and that was the way we were on the set. We had a good time on the set. We used to giggle and laugh and joke about other things that went on the set, because we kind of removed ourselves from them and did not become that involved with the shenanigans that went on a day-to-day basis. And I could see it as a great, great camaraderie. I would have loved to. It's just like an arm of the other and helping. And not a romance or anything, maybe that could have been underlying, but that might have had a little more believability than this seven-year quest that she was on. But at least that could have been a reality. It might have made it a little more solid. But I personally like Dee, and I think we see him, I would say, more than we see the other members of it. And even to this day, which is 20 years later. So I really think that's what could have been and would have been developed. There's no reason not to, anyway. Yes? he's fine. He's just he's bubbling around, and he's healthy and happy, and he's in great shape. He's a very private person. Dee is not explosive, or he's a very private person, very fun person, great sense of humor, marvelous man. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, offhand, I can't even think. I just have to go back through the names or something. That's cute. It really does say that. Okay, anybody else? Yes. Him having feelings, I would think that they would stay as far away from that as possible. He's been established already as saying that he doesn't have feelings except for that 50% of earth that is in him. And I think that is only allowed because he's fighting that tremendously. I think that's only allowed to come out not because he will let it, but because it just creeps out. And I think, you know, to develop it any further than that, you're going to start to make him human, and part of his charm will be gone. That's my opinion. I don't know how anybody would feel, but I suppose somebody will grasp that one and run with it. I mean, not mine, but the opposite. Yes? Well, they don't have as much air time. And they haven't had as much rehearsal, really. I mean, it almost amounts to that. It's very hard to go expressionless. And Leonard did such a beautiful job of, you'll find that in the beginning, he has more of the series. He does have more expression to his face than as it went on. And he started to learn how to bring in these emotions and to say the same thing without letting anybody see it. And he became perfect at that. But I think that may be the answer. Yes? I don't know. It's an interesting observation. I'm not really aware of it. I haven't analyzed it, and I don't know if I did what I would think about it. Vulcans that Sarek doesn't have any more emotion. Yeah, Amanda did, but she was an Earthling. I don't know how to answer your question. I'm sorry. Yes, behind you. Yes. No, well, see, number one was emotionless. They never did designate exactly where number one was from. But she was the emotionless, austere thing. But, I mean, the Vulcan was still always emotionless, but not as much so. What Jane did was take that aspect of number one's character and build it even more so into the Vulcan. Because you see in the cage, he talks and looks fairly normal. So it wasn't really that ingrained at that time. I don't think they talked about the emotionless Mr. Spock or how he doesn't have... there was no reference to it. That only developed later on as the character developed and as Gene took the character that was the second in command and made that into whoever was second in command, which ended up being the Vulcan. Yes. Anything else? Aren't we somewhere near... My God, we are. I don't think, it's like, wait a minute, let me take a final look here and see if there's anything else I think you might want to know. It really, there isn't that much else, I don't think. Save the Enterprise. That's mainly, I have a big note over here. Right, quite paramount for us, huh? You don't want to see the Enterprise go away. It's hanging in the Smithsonian Institute, and it's home to the crew, and Gene did a marvelous thing. Star Trek isn't Star Trek without the Enterprise. I must tell you another thing, though. You know, when that show first started and all the mail started coming in, some of them would ask for Kirk, some of them would ask for Spock, some of them would ask for both, but you know, everybody asked for the Enterprise. That was the star of the show. And everybody became to feel that was as much part of their home and coming into their home as people. So help us, okay? Oh, wait, all right, we'll do one around. Here, please. Well, I feel about Star Trek the same way that Tarzan or the C.S. Forrester characters or any of them, that it will always be, regardless of who does what to it now or what form it takes, eventually it will be revived, it will go down in literature, it already is in literature, and it will continue to go down in literature, and at some time or other it will always be played. The characters will always be Kirk and Spock and McCoy and all those things. They won't be whoever's playing them right now. And it will still always again be the Enterprise. You may introduce other ships too, but I mean that's the formula that was there. All right, next. Bill? If they do, they're going to be laughing at it a lot. I'm sure in history it'll be there. Another funny thing was we were up in the mountains at a lake, at another convention, not a Star Trek convention, and we had four or five of the astronauts and somebody from JPL and got in a conversation with the guy from JPL and said, listen, can the Enterprise fly? And he said, if that thing ever got up into space, it'd do flip-flops and jump through the universe and fall down. He said, it's just, dynamically, it's impossible for the thing to fly. So I think in the 23rd century, they would laugh their heads off. But it's all right. It wasn't built to fly for us. It worked. It served our purposes. And I think that's where it'll end up, too, for our purposes. Yeah. Yes? They have just turned on the air conditioning, and I can hear nothing. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you can always rebuild of it, no matter what it is. You rebuild it, and as long as they don't get it too big and funny, like the inside of that Excelsior, to me, was so sterile. It looked, you know, it's huge. There was nothing there. It just didn't look like home. And I hope to God they don't, if they do rebuild it, I hope they don't make it that way. It was a nice, homey place for 430 people. It's true. It sounds funny, but it was. Of course they can rebuild it and just christen it the Enterprise. There's no big deal about that. Yes, behind you. I can't hear a word. If you can get it halfway up or you come up or... I think in some of the movies later and everything, we realize if you realize there was only one elevator from the bridge, that doesn't make a lot of sense. There were no bathrooms on the ship. That didn't make a whole lot of sense. But it was done for dramatic purposes. As the shows went on, the movies went on, I think you'll find that they put in a wreck deck and they put in this and that, and there were colors, and the costumes are now, although not the greatest because they do look a little militaristic, but the costumes have begun to get a flare, and when people are off duty, they do the things that people do. And I think some of the color and some of the things are coming out of that. Maybe not enough, but you don't have time to develop a whole lot of sideshows when you've got a battle on your hands. And I think maybe that was their thinking. I think it's improving. Yeah. Yes? Oh, do they?
It's actually in Penguin Dictionary of Contemporary Quotations.
See, that's just an example of where it will go. It is literature, without a doubt. It has it is a cult. It has created a world. It's yeah, that's right. And it's in. And in so many countries and in so many languages, and it's translated into everything. Yeah, it's a phenomenon. And it's like Gene said, he didn't sit down one day to write a phenomenon, but it is one. And you accept it as that. And just go with it. Go. I just, I'm so proud to be a part of it, and doubly proud, of course, to be married to the guy who thought of it, because he is an absolute genius, and his imagination and creativity are unsurpassed anywhere in this world today. And I just hope he keeps on doing it. I wish he'd go back and straighten them out, but he's got other things to do. He does have other things to do and other things that he must do, and he's growing too. That's somewhere in the past for him, and he adores it dearly, but he must continue growing as the same as you all must too. Okay, just a couple more, because I'm getting worse. Yes. Well, he'll probably lift one eyebrow and go, oh. So it's something like, oh, mucked up again, huh? Yes. Okay. Can't hear it. Star Trek and a shake-up with the second pilot. It wasn't... Yeah. Well, it just took all new characters. They started over again. This is terrible. I can't hear you. I don't think just repeating is going... Can you... Anne, do you know... Can you hear? If you could just repeat what is said. And can we cut this off after this one then? Do you mind? Okay. All right. Yeah. Go. Yeah. I'll say, when it went through a bit of a shake-up. Well, no, Jeffrey Hunter's demise, I'm not sure that happened just then or a little after. What had happened was very unfortunate. His wife, truthfully, his wife came in and said, Jeffrey will not do this show again because it is beneath his dignity. I think that's the way it went. Well, yeah, I don't know what he had to do with it, but his wife was not his wife a little bit later. And then, as I understand, he hit the skids a little bit and fell down the stairs one night and broke something and died. But originally the reason he wasn't in the second one was that reason, and it was unfortunate, but it didn't have anything to do with the shakeup of the series, as I remember it. I'm not sure in what order all these things came, that's a little bit of gossip, but don't spread it around, huh? Okay. All right, I want to thank you all very much. I meant what I said about you being the grandest people in the world, and please invite me back again someday. I would love to come. I really would.
It's amazing. Why don't you have to buy the drink? Wait till you have a drink.
Right, that's fine. Fine.
You haven't got my drink.
Okay. What do you want? Huh? Oh, nothing else I was going to say, but for the announcement, because I've put off so many people for so long.
Yeah, I think Anne was going to do that when you came in. Because
I feel badly about putting everybody off and then if nobody makes the announcement, nobody knows what they're doing.
Should have just been announced.
All right.
Was it announced? Or you just excuse me, did you announce an autograph?
Yes.
Yes, mate. It's been announced.
It was drinking that night.